Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we are proud to welcome the legendary frontman, Mr. Richie Kotzen, on the guitar and lead vocals from the incredible rock trio, The Winery Dogs. He's in live in studio with his main Telecaster and will discuss his unique tone. The Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio and our good friends at Guitar Hummer at guitarhummer.com. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Flow to the Izzo, Floro, and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a great show for you tonight. Hey, Scott, how are you doing?
I am doing good. So I have one question for you, Jeff, before we get started.
Okay.
So on the Al Nico shootout, which one did you like?
They actually were all kind of interesting. My favorite overall one was the Celestian Gold.
Gold.
It was probably the most consistent in terms of going from dirty to clean. But the other ones had, I could hear them using them in certain situations. They all had an interesting sound. They all sounded pretty good.
Yeah, for our listeners, so I did a shootout between six different Al Nico speakers. It's up on my YouTube channel. Do a clean version and a dirty version. And dirty, I'm not wearing any clothes, so that's what makes it dirty. But so it's between six different speakers from Celestian, Eminence, Jensen, and Scumback. So quite a wide variety. And then just to let our listeners know, we will be taking callers at the second half of the show. So after we have a commercial break at the second half of the show, we'll be taking callers. And that number is 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815. Or you can join our live chat room on www.flowguitarenthusiasts. And you can harass us there and provide questions and comments for our guest.
Yes.
So anything new else otherwise?
I just want to mention, I got a chance to see, I don't know if everybody had seen it, was on PBS, but it's now on Blu-ray, the Hendrix bio, I Hear My Train Coming. It's really good. It was well done, and there's some footage in there that I've never seen before in there. They had shown some stuff from the Band of Gypsies that I hadn't seen in there, the Miami concert. But it was kind of interesting, the sound that he could get out of that. I mean, it's just, and it also shows a bunch of his guitars, the Flying V, a couple of Les Pauls, and even his, Steven Seagal has his Jazzmaster, but he was playing a Jazzmaster for a while, too.
Yeah, I think we had Norman's Rare Guitars talk about that on the show and how they...
And how much they sold it for.
Yeah. Well, why don't we go ahead and take our quick spot real quick, and then we'll kick off and introduce our guest.
Okay, here we go. There's a product out called Guitar Hummer that's designed to give you vintage sound without the vintage weight. We all know the more a guitar is played, the better the sound. Guitar Hummer is a guitar stand that simulates play by sending gentle vibrations through your guitar as it sits. Swap your guitar stand for Guitar Hummer, and in just a few weeks, you will notice deeper, richer tone and improved sustain. But don't take our word for it. Try it for 60 days, and if you don't notice a marked difference, return it for a full refund. Go to guitarhummer.com for more information or to purchase.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby from Sweetwater, inviting you to come to sweetwater.com to check out our fantastic 24-day holiday giveaway. Every day from December 1st to December 21st, we'll be giving away fantastic prizes, including full-blown home studios from Avid, Presonus, guitar rigs from Line 6, PA gear from QSC, guitars from Martin, digital drums from Yamaha, and much more. Check it out at sweetwater.com.
Remember,
Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome Mr. Richie Kotzen from the Winery Dogs.
Hey.
Man, it's so good to have you in here. So just first off, I mean, there's two things about those clips that I had there. So those are from some of your solo stuff and from the Winery Dogs. The Remember song, Live in Sao Paulo, we'll get into that because that sustain on that guitar is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's insane. So we've got to talk about how you got that.
Okay.
And then the last one, Desire. So this is how I know that you guys are a hit, all right? I am a huge fan of lots of different groups, like Dream Theater, you know, a whole wide variety, down to classical. Listen to them, force my wife to listen to them. Last night, I'm driving in the car, and she is singing that song, Desire.
Wow.
My wife never sings any of the songs. I couldn't believe it. I was like, then that means this is it.
That's funny.
So she loved it, and it's, you know, it's about the songs. So let's just talk about the song Remember.
Okay.
What were you playing to get that long just note?
That was my... Actually, on that tour, I was playing a Stratocaster.
Right.
Yeah. And it was my signature model... Strat, the white one, and you know, on that gig there were three different amps that they had provided for me. I didn't tour with my own rig, you know. Mm-hmm. I just kind of showed up and did the show, and I remember at Soundcheck just going through whatever they had, and I think I settled on an 800, a Marshall, which normally I don't play, and out of those three heads they had, that was the one that just sounded the best, and I had an overdrive pedal, and I think that was it. I haven't heard that record in a long time, but I don't think I traveled with anything other than an overdrive pedal and my guitar. And the overdrive pedal is a Japanese pedal called a Sobot Drive Breaker.
Ah.
And they have a couple of variations of it. The later variation is a two-stage pedal where you have the basic overdrive and then a boost function, and I think that's the one that I had then. I mean, it was quite a few years ago, but I'm pretty sure that's the one I had there. And as far as a sustain, you know, it really, a lot of it is just, you know, luck, you know, where you are at that moment. And I know when I feel like the guitar is going to respond that way and I'm ready for it, then I'll just hold that position, because it really has a lot to do with where you're standing and how the amp is responding and the volume of the amp,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so on that particular note you're talking about, I just happened to hit it right, where I hit the note. It's supposed to be a long, sustained note based on what I did on the album recording.
Right.
That's what I did there. And, of course, in the studio, you can create the perfect environment. Live, it's a little different. But when I hit the note on that show, it just responded that way, and I heard it, and I went with it, you know.
It was, yeah. I mean that just caught me when I heard that. I was like, holy crap, that is it right there. I mean, that's what people are going for.
Cool. Yeah.
Now you're in the studio. You have your signature Telecaster with you.
I do.
Can you talk about, you know, the process of getting a signature Telecaster with a company like Fender? And
yeah.
What's unique about yours that's different than just a stock American-made or Japanese-made Tele?
Yeah, I've actually had two signature models with Fender since 1996, and they still are manufactured in Japan. For a long time, they were only available in Japan, and this year, Fender decided to make my guitar available globally. And although I do have a Strat, I play the Telecaster more than I play the Strat, so we decided to release the Telecaster, since that's the guitar that I play, you know, 80% of the time. And it's based off of a guitar that was made for me in 1991, and it was a custom shop Telecaster that was finished in a tobacco sunburst with a flame maple top. And I kind of took that guitar and modified it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things I did was put comfort cuts in the back, because I just, you know, the normal Telecaster's kind of squared off.
Right.
And I like the feeling of the guitar being closer to your body, and the comfort cut allows that. And also, I tailored, you know, for my arm here on the back part of the guitar. And as far as the neck, it's a larger neck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a thicker neck with large frets, maple.
And then I asked you this before, but do you do that for tone or you do that just for playability?
Both. I mean, definitely for the way it feels.
Mm-hmm.
I just like, it just feels better for my body to have a larger neck. But I think a lot of the tone actually comes through the neck as well as the body. So more wood can't hurt.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, for those of you that are familiar with Fender necks, it's a profile C neck, I believe.
Is it?
Well, that's what they say on their website. Website.
Well, now we know.
So, but yeah, and you've got some different pickups in that. What are you doing with those?
DiMarzio pickups. It's in the neck position. It's Twang King, which is their basic replacement pickup. And then in the bridge, it's Chopper T. And it's a humbucking pickup. It takes up the same size as a normal single coil. But it's not a super loud humbucker. It's still relatively quiet. It just doesn't hum. Mm-hmm. So you can still get, you know, a cleaner tone out of the guitar. And then the other thing that's unique about it, in the middle position, rather than a tone knob, we put a switch here.
Mm-hmm.
I never really use the tone knob that much, so I put a switch here, and it's a rotary switch. So in one position, it's series, and in the other, it's parallel.
Isn't that one you buy that way also?
Yeah. All the stuff I'm talking about is the way the guitar comes. There's a couple things I do to the guitar. If Fender sends me one of my signature models, the first thing I do is I sand the finish off the neck, just because I like the way that feels. And the other thing that I do I add a tuning device in the guitar by a company called M-Tune, and it's this little disc that lives under the volume knob, and when you turn it on, it kills the output, and you have a little tuner right in the guitar. And I just find that really useful, you know, when I'm on tour backstage, I want to make sure I'm in tune and that sort of thing. And also, the other thing I do is I add this drop D tuner. And there was a period of time I had a lot of songs where I needed to get the drop D.
Mm-hmm.
For the Winery Dogs, I don't use it because we don't have any songs really where I'm doing that. But it was something that I implemented in the past because I had a lot of songs with that.
Is the Flame Maple Top, is that for looks or is that because of the sound also?
Initially, many, many years ago, it was for looks. But when I tried out different guitars and I learned about wood,
mm-hmm.
I learned that the guitars that I liked were this combination of wood, like the Swamp Ash with this Flame Top. They're the ones that just sounded great to me, and so I wanted my guitar to have that combination.
Well, since you got it, would you mind kind of giving our listeners a demo of both of the different pickups?
So that's the neck position. Well, not the neck position. That's the bridge position. Sorry. Get confused. And then you've got the... That's the Twang King in the neck position. And the other thing I was talking about was this whole thing with the middle position where you have a... That's the standard Tele sound in the middle position. And then when you turn the switch for the tone knob, you have the mid-range, it's more aggressive. That setting a lot for certain kinds of solos, you know, especially through a loud distorted amp, you know, it tends to resonate in a different way. So you've got an extra sound here with this guitar with that little switch added.
Now, the one thing I wanted to mention, so as I'm sitting here watching him play, I wasn't aware of this until actually someone from our Facebook page had pointed it out, and I should give him credit. It was Mark Darrow, actually, and he wanted to ask, why did you switch to using fingers, no pick, and no pick?
It's just one less thing to carry out when I'm on the road, you know? I mean, it's enough. I got to take my guitar, I got to take my clothes, now suddenly I got to deal with guitar picks, and they're so little, and they get lost, and you know what I mean? It's like... Just cut that out of the equation.
So how do you play the fast riffs? Are you doubling it?
I developed a little way to do it, but you know the truth of the matter is I really kind of you know abandoned the pick. I mean part of what I said in that little joke was true, but another part of it was I remember I was in South America on tour and I was in Brazil and I did a show and. I just really was, I felt uninspired with what I was doing. You know, I was just not into being me at that particular time. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I got three more shows to do, you know, back to back. What can I do to fix that? And I knew, you know, I could stay in the hotel room and practice, but I didn't foresee myself getting much better in the course of 8 or 9 hours. So I thought, what can I do to change it? And I said, what if I went on stage and just didn't take the guitar pick with me? And so I tried it. And it was interesting because I immediately lost a huge portion of my repertoire. Obviously, there's no alternate picking. There's no sweep picking. There's no trills. None of that, right? So what did I have left? Well, I had my melodic sense. Mm-hmm. And somehow on that show... I played better than I had played in a long time, and I felt more connected to the guitar, I felt inspired, and I looked forward to playing the next show instead of dreading it. And so it was interesting because after that, I had my manager there with me at the time, and he said, oh man, it was great, you played with no pick, and the guitar sounded different, and you seem more inspired, and your solos are better, and you should keep doing that, keep doing. So I ended up, I kept doing it. And it kind of evolved. And so now I'm kind of working back into my repertoire some of the things that I lost by losing the pick, you know, like sweep picking or that sort of thing. And, that's the key, I think, to moving forward. It's like being inspired. And if you're doing something and you lose that fire and that inspiration, it gets to the point where it's like, well, why am I doing this? You know, I don't want music to become like a, even though there's elements of a job, I don't want it to become a job or become laboring. You know, or become a hassle. Because mm-hmm. I'm a pretty smart guy. I can find other ways to make a living. I don't have to, you know, sacrifice my art for that. And so that's how I was feeling about the guitar. I was starting to kind of like be mad at the instruments. Like I need something new. And by dropping the pick, it just kind of shook me up a little bit. It's like, all right, well, you got a lot more to learn. There's a lot more you can do with the instrument. And so I kind of started over a little bit. So it became a new inspiration. And that's why I did it. Yeah.
Well, so I think something that I've got a clip here that will highlight you just going crazy and just showing what you can do even without a pick. And I hope you didn't use a pick for it, because I think you used a pick on a couple of the songs on Winery Dogs, right?
I did, actually, yeah.
Not Time Machine, right?
I don't know what you're going to play. Let me hear it. I'll tell you exactly
what I did.
All
right, so number two. So it sounds like the verdict was you were using
it. No, I can hear it. I can hear the pick striking the strings. Yeah, I'm using the pick there.
That's what I thought.
But, you know, on this record, it's different, man, because it's like, you know, it's a more aggressive thing, and there was moments where I felt like I needed to be more, you know, violent with the instrument. So
well, one of the reasons why I chose that is one, because you just let loose on the guitar.
Yeah,
two,
yeah, yeah.
I think it highlights all the members of the band.
Mm-hmm.
It shows off one of the things that I love about you guys is the harmonies that you guys do.
Yes.
And that song, as I when we had Billy on before, I straight up said that's my favorite song.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
that's cool.
You know, just jump to that one and listen to that, and you'll fall in love. But anyways.
Well, awesome. I feel better because hearing you play that, you know, listening to
but there's some shit I'm doing.
And your thumb, I look at his thumb and his nails.
I mean, I'm doing the same licks, you know, with or without a pick.
So. But I'm like,
my left hand.
His thumb,
and
he'd have to have an enormous thumbnail with, you know, just like.
Well, I mean, the other thing
is like. That's kind of how, you know, live when I play, I don't use the pick, so.
Now, that when you're playing right there, when you're using the thumb, are you using the flesh or you're hitting the nail?
No nails involved, really. It's all...
all in the flesh.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I mean, that's pretty... out the nail thing. Your attack is pretty intense for not using your nail. That's pretty good.
It's like a plucking thing, isn't it?
But the thing I love about when you do that solo is, I mean, you're sitting there, you're playing just ridiculous amount of notes, but you can still hear a melody in there, which is just, it's great. I mean,
that's cool. Thanks. Yeah.
So I love it. Now, what amps do you use? What are you using when you record?
Fender. 90% of the amps on the record are Fender amps. I use Fender Vibra King for a lot of stuff. I use the Fender Bassman for some of the rhythm stuff with the Vibra King together.
Mm-hmm.
Mic'd up at the same time. I use a Vibra Lux. Those were the three main Fender amps. And then I have a 100-watt Plexi Marshall. It's like one of the ham-wired ones. And I use that for some of the real big rhythms. And those are the kind of like guitar overdubs that are like when you mix the record, like if you muted them, you'd be like, oh, what happened? So in other words, they're just kind of like support.
Mm-hmm.
And so certain songs have them, not all the songs, but like the chorus of I'm No Angel, when I do the power chords, you're like, that kind of stuff. Just in the background, I do a pass and double it, and then tuck it underneath the Fenders.
Mm-hmm.
It just adds a more mass, you know, to the chorus. And then I have a little 20-watt Marshall head that I use sometimes for certain things. But most of the stuff was the Vibra King, the Vibra Lux, or the combination with the Bassman mic'd up. And then at one point in the recording, Lainey had sent me an amp, a 50-watt head. And I remember plugging it in, I really liked it, and I did a couple solos with it. And one of the solos that I remember doing on that, it was a song, Not Hopeless.
Mm-hmm.
That solo is the Lainey head. I liked it, but then I had to give it back. But I was impressed with that head. That was a good head. I wanted to comment on that just because, you know, they sent it to me. And I actually did use it, so.
Did you use any other guitars besides the Tellys when you overdubbed and layered?
I used most of the record is this actual Telecaster. I have the first Telecaster I ever bought that I use on some stuff because it has a different tonality. And so sometimes when you're trying to... You know, if you do a part and then you double it to make it have a bigger stereo spread, you might want to have another guitar, you know, playing the same part. So I use that Tele for that. And I also have this Yamaha guitar. It's a big hollow body. I don't know the model of it, but actually a buddy of mine was at my house the other night and said, oh, I have the same guitar. And he uses it for the same purpose I do, for overdubs and just for an extra texture. And it has kind of one of those Bigsby-type tremolos. So, like, if you listen to a song like Damaged, when I'm doing that kind of bending, that's that Yamaha guitar doing that, when you hear the tremolo move. Yeah.
And that has humbuckers on it, right?
I think they're humbuckers, but they look weird. They might be single coil pickups that are bigger. It's just whatever came in the guitar.
Now, do you have a specific way you record your mics? Do you do, like, close miking and then capture the room, or do you have any preferences?
It depends on what I'm doing. On this record, I spent more time with how I recorded the guitar. So I remember specifically, my studio is very small. Since we made the record, I actually expanded and made it literally twice the size. But then it was very small, so... when I started guitars, all the drums were removed, and the only thing in the room were guitar amps. I actually tweeted or Instagrammed a picture of it back when I started recording, and I had all my amps that I used. You can see every amp I use in the record because they're all lined up on this picture. I even used one that I built. I built a Tweed Deluxe off of a kit, and I used that for certain things. So I lined them all up, and the close miking was pretty much 57s, you know. And then what I would do, like, for example, the dying is a good example. In the chorus, the guitars get bigger. And so what that is the Viber King and the Bassman, each with a 57 on them, each going to its own track being recorded, and then a U87 for the room. So you've got three faders, you know, controlling the tone, two amps, and you can kind of mix that, and then I doubled it. So in the end, when you're mixing it, you've got six faders of, you know, variables of how to control the tonality of the guitar, and you have one performance and then the double. That's for the stereo image. And it's just kind of up to the guy mixing it to deal with it. But, you know, in the process, it gave me a deeper sound and more options. But a lot of times, I just stick a 57 in front of it and go. Because in the end, for me, the most important thing isn't always the tone. I mean, the tone really, in my opinion, comes out of your hands in the end. I mean, it really comes out of your hands and what you play. And so the point of the matter for me when I'm making a record is, what am I playing, and how does it fit in with what the rest of the band is doing? And is it musical, and does it elevate the song to a place where it makes you want to listen to it? So I don't get so caught up in, like, oh, yeah, but this amp sounds like that, and this amp sounds like that. It's like, no, it's more about the performance and what I'm actually playing.
Right.
You know?
Now, but with your amps, are you using just the stock speakers in them, or do you use specific speakers?
No, the Jensens are in the Fender amps. That's what they come with. The Marshall stuff, I have a lot of Marshall stuff from years ago, and I always put the vintage 30s in my cabinets. I think the Marshall combo that I have that, God, I don't want to say the wrong name, but I think it's a 74X. I think that has a 25 watt selection in it, and that's in there, but I didn't change anything. I try to avoid the 70 watt selections just because in my experience there's something about the tone that is grating to my ear that I don't really respond to so well. So I like the speakers with a smaller cone, which would be a 25 or 30 watt selection.
What did you use for the speakers for the Bassman? You mentioned you used a Bassman.
Whatever's in there. They're Jensens, I think. They're 10 inch.
So it's just standard.
Yeah. I think that's what's in there.
So one of the songs you guys do that I think arguably is one of your biggest hits off of there is I'm No Angel.
Oh.
And that's a cool little riff that you do. It sounds simple, but it does not look easy to play.
No, you want me to show you how to
play? Yeah, would you mind showing it? And then maybe...
So I'm going to tell you what I'm doing. Oh, you're filming this too. Good. So the first part is relatively simple because I got this hammer-on thing here happening between the B and the C sharp. But here's what gets kind of tricky. I'm holding this B note, and I'm bending the fourth fret up to an E. So you got... And then I'm matching the E with the open string. So that's where you want that to be in tune. Otherwise, it sounds horrible. And then when I wrote that, I thought, all right, what am I going to do with that? So then I figured, well, the melody that you sing should probably just follow the guitar line, because it seemed to me like a strong enough melody that would be worth singing. Can you get me back on my feet? Can you make me think that my mojo is rising? Oh, I only follow the beat of survival. Suddenly you sing the chorus, which I can't hit those notes right now because it's It's not possible. But anyway, that's how it works, you know? I don't want to sound like a croaking frog on the radio. Interesting story about that song that I will share, though, is that chorus wasn't always there. The riff was always what it is, and the melody was always what it mm-hmm. is. And I had the storyline for the verse.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can imagine, when it went... somehow it went to...
Hello, baby, take me higher. I got nothing left to lose.
So it went from that into that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized I didn't like it because it went from a halftime thing to a double time thing, and that's very tricky to do to have it sound right. And so somehow I ended up abandoning that and coming up with
I'm no angel.
So I demoed it, and that was the end of it, right? Well, when I started playing some of the songs that became Winery Dog songs to the guys, I had played the I'm No Angel thing, and we decided to do it. But they also ended up hearing that Elevate chorus in the I'm No Angel song. And it was Mike's idea to grab that chorus and turn it into what became Elevate.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had this whole... all that stuff was in another song with a different chorus. And we actually Frankensteined the two things and put them together.
Wow.
It's kind of interesting songwriting trivia that a lot of people know about.
Well, we're hitting the middle of our show. Jeff, you want to hit our ad spots, and then we'll bring back, and we'll be taking callers. And just to give you the number again real quick, it's 323-203-0815.
Yeah, they're already calling on the phone, so we'll be right back.
Do you want to get the best possible tone from your acoustic instrument? Guitar Hummer is a guitar stand that does more than just rest your guitar. It creates a gentle but continuous vibration that is equivalent to playing your instrument all day, every day. This concentrates years of seasoning into mere weeks, improving tone and sustain. You may not be able to afford a vintage guitar, but you now can achieve vintage sound. But don't take our word for it. Try it for 60 days, and if you don't notice a marked difference, return it for a full refund. Go to GuitarHummer.com for more information or to purchase.
Hi, this is Aaron Raby, your resident guitars and amps geek at Sweetwater Sound. 1-800-222-4700 or visit us on the web at www.sweetwater.com. Today, Sweetwater and the Flow are proud to bring you guitar legend Richie Kotzen. Richie Kotzen's been on the scene for years, having played with Poison, Mr. Big, jazz fusion acts with Stanley Clark and Billy Sheehan, and his current project, The Winery Dogs. They came through my town last week, and I had the pleasure of seeing them. They absolutely blew my mind. Fantastic players, great sound, perfect performance. It's a real joy watching Richie play his Telecaster, coaxing tones out of it that we didn't think possible. At Sweetwater, we love discussing gear, we love chasing tone, just like you do, and we can help you find that tone that's been floating around in your head. Feel free to give us a call and discuss gear, 1-800-222-4700. I'm Aaron Raby, thanks for having us.
Hola amigos, hello everyone, my name is Billy Sheehan and I'm from the Winery Dogs and you're watching Fit Flow Guitar Enthusiasts.
Love it. So welcome back everyone. We'll be taking callers. Now I do want to mention before we take the callers, got to do some plugs here for Richie. So he's got some solo shows coming up, by the way, at the Baked Potato on November 26th and December 17th, and he's got Mike Bennett on drums and Dylan Wilson on bass. And he's got three shows in China on December 6th, 7th, and 8th, Beijing, Shanghai, and Hong Kong. And the Winery Dogs have some new shows they just are ready to announce. They've got shows that I don't know if you can get tickets now already or...
Through the
website, you can get tickets already. So B.B. King Blues Club in New York on March 25th and 26th. And then they are flying as quick as they can over to Chicago, and they're playing at the Arcata Theater on the 27th of March. And then on the 29th, they're playing on a cruise. The Monsters of Rock Cruise.
Because it's a boat.
So that should be great. I mean, it'll be more shows to see them. Hopefully they'll come out in L.A. too. So, do we have a caller?
Yeah, here we go. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Could I have your name and where you're calling from?
I'm Mike from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hey, Mike. You have a question for Richie?
Yeah, I was going to ask him if he planned on doing any shows to, like, commemorate the 20th anniversary of Motorhead's Family Reunion, which was, like, his first, like, album right after Poison that really hit it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it was 20 years ago. That's crazy. Do you know when that record was released, the actual date?
God, I don't remember that. I know it was 1994.
Yeah, I know it was 94. I'd be curious to know the date. Probably the summer or something. No, you know, I didn't plan that, but that would be interesting. It would be cool to do, like, a show and just do that record. That's a good idea. Actually, I could probably do that. It wouldn't be really 20 years, because I have a gig on the 17th of December here in L.A. I could maybe try to learn that. That's the biggest problem with me. I have so many records, you know, my records that I write these songs and I sing them and then I forget that I wrote them. And then I do these gigs and it's like, oh, well, do this song, do that. I said, what? I have a song called Lie to Me? Really? Oh, my God, I forgot. And I go back and listen, oh, that was a cool song. Yeah, I should do that. That's a good idea.
I was also going to ask you, I know your first record you did, it was produced by Jason Becker.
Yeah.
And I just recently saw that documentary on him. I wonder how is he doing, like, is he still doing music? I know.
I saw him recently in San Francisco, and he's, you know, he's got the same sense of humor, and he's just been a huge inspiration to me and a great friend, and we've been doing benefits, I think there's another one we're going to do next year. So he's just a great person and a great influence.
Thanks a lot. I saw you in Cleveland the other weekend. It was great.
Right on, man.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot. Bye. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Could I have your name and where you're calling from?
My name is Mike Burns. I'm calling from Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, Canada.
Oh, hey. All right, from Canada. Welcome. Do you have a question,
man,
for Richie?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to tell him how big of a fan I am, and I went down to see him in New York with the Winery Dogs back in August, and they were just unbelievable. And I just wanted to know if they had any plans to come up to Canada at some point, because I'd love to catch them again, you know.
Well, we're trying to hit as many places as we can, and it's personally, I'd love to play Canada. I've actually never played there. I've never done a show there. I've been to Toronto to do press, but never actually played a full on show. And
well, you know what, man? Like, I'm from a little island. We're between Newfoundland and Nova Scotia. It's called Prince Edward Island.
Oh, cool.
I don't know if you've heard of it or not, but I know a ton of people just on this island that would go to see you if you came. If you even went to Montreal and stuff like that, like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You're a big hit up. You're a big hit up here, man. You know.
Yeah, I'd love to do it, man. Definitely. Yeah.
Me and the girlfriend went to New York to see you guys, and it was just phenomenal. And I also want to say to you, like, I'm a guitarist myself, and I play in a band up here called Big Huge. Just really influenced by, like, AC/DC and stuff like that. A lot of classic rock stuff, and I kind of ran into a rut myself as a guitar player. And then when I seen you live with the Winery Dogs, I got really inspired. When I seen you play with No Pick and stuff like that, I thought that was awesome, man. So I've been messing around with a lot of finger picking stuff now.
Cool. Yeah, and that's for me, too. It's like I'm trying to explore stuff that, like, you know, things that I don't know so well that, you know, that's how you grow, you know. And if, you know, it's like if I keep doing the same thing over and over again, you know, I get tired of it. You know, it's like it makes me not want to do it. So that's kind of why.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's like try to find some different things and also playing with other guys. You know, if you got a group of guys up there that you can play with, you know, it makes you feel inspired and makes you want to make music.
Absolutely. Well, you know, man, I just said that you really inspired me when I seen you in New York. So. Yeah.
Thanks.
Hopefully someday I'll be able to see you up here in Canada. It'd be great to have you up somewhere. You know what I mean?
Awesome. Because
I'd make the trip to go see it. That's for sure.
Yeah, it'd be great.
Well, thanks for calling.
Do that.
Thank you very much.
So by the way, we have from the chat room. We have November 23rd, 1994 was the release of that album from Michelle.
Oh, is that when it came out? It was November of 1994.
Yep.
Wow.
Okay, we have another caller. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Can I have your name and where you're calling from?
Oh, hey, it's Steve from near Toronto.
All right, another Canuck. Welcome. Another do you have a question for Richie?
Yeah, I do. Hey, Richie.
Hey.
I was just wondering, what are your thoughts retrospectively on your 2010 U.S. tour of for the Peace Sign record? Do you look back on that fondly? Do you just kind of your reaction? I don't know when the last time you did a U.S. wide tour of a solo album was. So
yeah, that was cool for me. It was a fun tour. Like you said, you know, I hadn't really done since the Motherhead Summer Reunion tour. I think that was the only time I did a solo tour was for that Peace Sign thing, and that was something we kind of put together ourselves. You know, me and my manager at the time just kind of went for it, and it was great. You know, to get out and play in my own country, because most of the stuff that I do touring-wise ends up being outside of the United States. And, you know, I really don't know why. People ask me that. But a lot of times it comes down to, you know, where offers come from. And I'm not really aggressive as it relates to my career. You know, I don't really force myself into situations. And a lot of times I find myself kind of moving away from situations just for whatever reason. And so... you know, I met up with this guy that was managing me at the time and convinced me to kind of do this tour, and it ended up being a success for us. You know, I got out there and got to play this stuff live, and I thought it was fun. Did you go to any of those shows?
Yeah, actually, I caught your hometown swing there in Pennsylvania.
Ah, what was your impression since you brought it up?
Oh, I mean, I've been a fan for years, and you know, it's been a privilege to have known your art for all these years. And so, you know, I'm a bit biased, but I think I guess I was wondering, you know, if it had worked out you know, financially for you, if that's a concern. I know you go to Europe a lot, and it was really great to see you do a solo thing through the US, and you know, with respect to the Winery Dogs, I think it's just an utter treat for long-time Richie Kotzen fans to have you, you know, be in synergy with musicians of that caliber. So we're all very, I think, grateful for that.
Right on, man. Thank you.
Hey, man. Thanks, Richie.
Thanks for calling.
Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Could I have your name and where you're calling from?
Oh, my name is Susan. I'm calling from San Diego.
Hi, Susan. Do you have a question for Richie?
Yeah, actually, I kind of do. My question is, I know he's made a lot of albums, but I just wanted to know, is there one particular album that's really close and dear to his heart? Which one would that be?
Probably out of all of them, and it's weird to even point one out because it's, you know, it's kind of like children in a way, and I know I've heard people say that before, but it's true. You know, you write a song, you do a record, and every time you finish a record, you walk away thinking, oh, this is the best thing I've ever done, and you're excited. I mean, that's the way it should be, and that's the way it's been for me. But I think Into the Black is a pretty significant achievement for me, because it's the first record that I ever made where I didn't have any kind of outside influence. You know, it was one of those situations where I was just really recording songs as they were written, and then after a certain period of time, I had a batch of material that just kind of fit together, almost like a story, and I just decided to release it on my own. And I remember I stuck it up on iTunes, and at the time I had CD Baby just deal with, you know, distributing the physical copies of the record, and it ended up being a record for me that's just really honest, and there's nothing on that record that even to this day I don't stand behind. And a lot of times you go back and listen to your past, and sometimes you cringe on a song or two. And with that record, I don't really have that feeling. I really felt like it was an honest record, and interestingly enough, that record has my most downloaded song, which is You Can't Save Me. So I think there's a certain level of honesty and truth in that record that that kind of comes through. So I mean, I hate having to pick a record because then I could say, well, there's other records that I like, but you know, you're asking the question. That's probably the answer.
Okay, I'll definitely want to check that out. I saw you guys at San Juan Capistrano here not too long ago, and I have been playing the Winery Dog CD almost every day driving into work, and I have to say thank you so much for that. And I am going to be up at the Baked Potato next month to see your show, so I'm
really great.
Excited about that.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Great pleasure. Thank you so very much.
Yes, and actually, you should mention, actually, last week the vinyl just came out of the Winery Dogs. So if you want to hear it, as a lot of people argue, the best way you can hear it, pick up the vinyl.
Mm, interesting. I don't have a turntable. I should get one just to play my own record.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you so much. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Can I have your name and where you're calling from?
My name is Joe D'Amico, and I'm calling from San Diego, California.
Welcome, Joe. Do you have a question for Richie?
Yeah, I do. Actually, a couple things. I wanted to just let him know that I think that he's one of the most underrated players I've ever heard, and I think that's starting to change because it sure is creating a buzz with this Winery Dogs, and I saw them with... over here at Ramona Main Stage, up in Ramona, about a half an hour away from San Diego, where I live. And just wanted to ask him about, I'm an older guy, I'm 56, and I wanted to ask him, you know, about his techniques and stuff like that. I've been playing for 43 years, and most of those years are just ear playing, you know, like Hendrix. And about 3, 4, 5 years ago, I realized I was somewhat feeling crippled, if you will, because if you don't know the theory end of it, you know, it limits you. And so I've been really just playing between 4 and 5, 6 hours a day, and just kind of wanted to get his take on, you know, I'm learning the scales, the modes, and all that stuff, and it's coming along real good. And I want to ask him, you know, what he thought about, you know, what I should keep working on. I think I'm on the right track, you know, just learning the theory and all that type thing. And
it's hard to answer without actually, you know, sitting down and playing with you or hearing you play. But it's a couple things. You know, it's knowing the foundation of music is always, you know, helpful. And like,
sure.
You know, why chords relate to each other and how scales connect to those chords and all that stuff. And this is basic theory, which you can pick up with a private instructor, or you know, some guys can just go online and figure it out. But
I have a couple teachers right now.
Yeah, it's good to have it.
They're great.
Yeah, it's good to have that. But one thing I wanted to say that is important is once you get some of that stuff under your belt is the, you know, getting out and playing with people. So, you know, you can get with other guys, a drummer, a bass player, a keyboard player, and just...
Yeah, I've been doing that since I was 13.
Yeah, there you go.
So I've got that down. You know, I've got the chops, I got the hand, all that, but I really didn't know what I was doing. I guess they call it getting outside of the box, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yep.
And I'm doing that, and I'm like, wow, this is working, and I'm just really... You know, like I said, I'm an older guy. I play with a couple different bands. I have a Jeff Beck tribute. We just opened up for Holdsworth. And,
oh, wow.
And hearing him was like, wow, man, I got to, like, forget about 3 hours a day. Let's go 12. You know?
If you got the time,
amazing.
Man. I mean, the more time you put into it, you know, the faster you're going to excel, too, you know?
Sure. And he's just, you know, the way he plays, I'm sure you know, he's just, when I saw him live without a pick and just stood right in front of him the whole time and... he's just my favorite player right now. You know, there's so many out there, you know that, but just the way he does it is just insane. When I'm looking at the Winery Dogs and I see Billy Sheehan shake his head and look at Mike Portnoy and go, oh my God, like just insane. You know, some of the stuff he's doing on I think the song The Dying.
Mm-hmm.
And he just blows my mind, and I've just been really studying him a lot and just kind of wanted to just get his, you know, just get his wisdom and just, you know, you think I'll ever, I guess you never really get there. I mean, there's so much theory, you can go on and on and on, you know. So I've got the nimbleness of my fingers. There's no problem there. It's just, you know, now it's kind of like starting over. know what I mean? And then connecting the two, the theory with the experience from playing with people.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
And learning covers and being in classic rock bands and that type thing, you know. And just kind of wanted to just, you know, say hey and just try to get some inspiration from them.
Right on.
Well, great. Thanks for calling. Do you want to take one more real quick?
No, I don't think we have. We're at the bottom, so.
All right, we're at the end.
Because it is over.
Thanks, anyway, thanks for calling.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah,
I appreciate
you.
It.
So we're coming to the end of the show here. Definitely want to also mention Richie's signature guitar is available from our sponsor, Sweetwater.
Yes, and people, I'm sitting right next to it. It's an awesome guitar. It's beautiful. It's just, great sound.
And before the show, we actually shot Richie talking about the specifics of it and showing it, so that'll be up on YouTube whenever I can get it done. But
and also you have that when he was demoing that song. So Joe out there, you can learn how he did it. So
yeah, check it out on at the Selenium. My YouTube is Selenium. Now before we go, Richie, would you mind giving us maybe like 30 seconds of some good stuff, and then we'll end it with The Dying from the Winery Dogs.